You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is The View from the Gladys Street, a podcast by the fans, for the fans, as we go on the terraces to discuss all the big talking points at Everton Football Club.
Welcome to The View from the Gladys Street podcast. It's me, Ian Kroll, on hosting duties for what is probably going to be a painful 45 minutes of talking about Everton. It is the fan show and we are broadcasting from the Royal Blue podcast channel. This week I'm joined by two guests. First up, we have the return of Mark Rotty, last on the show when things were a little bit more positive. How are things, Mark? You all good?
Yeah, good, thank you, mate. You all right?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Are you still in Australia? Just bragging about the sun there that you just had?
A little bit warm, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, as I said, Mark is joining us from Australia. As mentioned, if you listened to the show a couple of weeks ago, he has emigrated and he's brought a mate along, an Aussie mate, and making his first appearance on the show. We have Neil Leahy. Neil is a top blue living in Oz. Welcome to the show, Neil. How are things?
I'm good, mate. How are you? I just thought then, because I'm in Sydney and Mark's Adelaide, so it's actually three time zones that we're on right now.
Fantastic stuff. That's so what time? It's currently, as we are recording now, it's 7:15 in Liverpool. What time is it where you are, Neil?
Yeah, so it must be 6:15 in the morning.
Morning, yeah.
Right, fantastic. Well, there you go. That's the modern day technology in full flow there. So, Neil, obviously, you know, it's kind of an Australian special here. What, as an Everton fan and stuff like that, what made you go down to Australia and how long have you been out there?
Well, I've been here just over 8 years now. I suppose that was the hardest thing of moving away was, you know, missing the football, not just Everton, but the football in general, because obviously the times are difficult to watch the football, but we come up with ways of doing it every week. So I started off in Perth, a big bit more of an Everton following in Perth, or Scouts following in general, because it's just smaller. Everyone seems to know some Scouts are in Perth, and then I moved to Sydney 6 years ago, and it's a bit more vast here. So I think I know one blue, and the rest of them are spread across the Premier League, unfortunately. So my conversations are slightly different maybe than what they are in Liverpool, and I'm just discussing it with blues and reds. So yeah, probably know more about Tottenham than the average blue. Got a few of those as friends, but yeah, it's I make it work.
Absolutely, yeah. And you did mention before that you knew Mark before you moved down to Australia, so obviously you do kind of know each other and kept in touch through the love of Everton, I suppose.
Yeah, so there's always been a few links between me and Mark, and then a couple of friends of ours told me that you moved over here at the beginning of the year, was it? And then luckily enough that the borders opened the other week, so I went to Adelaide. That's where my wife's from anyway, so I've got links to where Mark lives, and we had a good catch up. Yeah, so a few too many that day, wasn't it, Mark? And it was sort of mid slump, if you like, of the last 4 weeks. So we put a few things there. We put a few things to across the table, didn't we, Mark? So, it's good to catch up, and it's always good to, you know, rekindle old friends.
We had a good Everton moan. It was great.
That's obviously when all the negativity probably started then, was it, when we were in that mid-slump there?
I think it was in the Southampton and Newcastle game, so we just lost the first one, but obviously the warning signs were there. So, yeah, that's when we met up.
Yeah.
Right, well, hopefully more positive results over the next couple of weeks, and we can both get you back on the show. But Mark, you want to mention a little plug for the Everton Australian Supporters Club, a special night that's planned for next week. Is that right? Do you want to tell us and the listeners what to expect, because it's a bit of a interactive online thing. Is that what you mentioned? Is that what you said? Yeah.
So they've organised, so the Everton Supporters Club Australia have restarted again on Twitter. I think it went a bit idle or stale for a while. So they've relaunched the Twitter page and the Facebook page, and they're going to relaunch a new logo on the same night, which is November the 15th. So I think in the UK, it's in the morning. And here, it's going to be 7:30 Sydney time, I think. So it's just an online question and answer with Baz and Ed from Toffee TV. There's raffle prizes to be won, and then they're going to relaunch the new logo for Everton Supporters Club Australia. And then the hope is from there that it grows and the sub-branches from that. So New South Wales, where Neil is, and South Australia, where I am, will obviously get more followers and more fans. And, you know, that's the hope, is to rebrand it and relaunch it. So hopefully people, if anyone's listening, will tune in. I think it's $5 for the ticket. I think you then get an online link with that, and then you can Zoom in. And, yeah, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of fun that night. So I know one of the main guys is called Lee Hayes. And, yeah, I think he's one of the main ones trying to organise it. So, yeah, so I'd give it a little plug. So there you go.
So what date's that on, Mark? Was that the 15th?
15th of November, yeah, which I think is, well, next Tuesday, next Monday.
It's in a few days, I think, that, Mark.
So it's that'll be the Sunday in the UK. So is that different to in Australia?
No, it's Sunday, yeah. It's the Sunday evening here then, yeah.
Oh, all right, it's fantastic. All right, well, yeah, definitely worth sort of looking into and getting involved in. So, yeah, absolutely. Sounds really good. And good luck to the Everton Australia Supporters Club and the Twitter account. I think I followed it this afternoon, and hopefully a new logo and some interaction from their behalf will definitely go down quite well. So, yeah, it's good to have you both on the show. As mentioned in the previous podcast, we have gone international. It's always good to get new faces on the show as well. So, Neil, just want to give you the floor first, really. Anyone who's new on the podcast, yeah, and making the debut, just I'd like to ask them what have they made of Everton's season so far. I know we're very early into it, but it's certainly had its ups and certainly a couple of downs. But what have you made of it so far?
Well, I suppose it's the tale of two periods, really, isn't it? It's not really been, it's been a mixed bag, but it's literally been the ultimate high and what feels now like the ultimate low. I thought the signings were good. Thought we had a great summer window, and there was maybe a couple of things which weren't ideal towards the end of the window, and maybe a backup striker and the right back situation, which has been ongoing now for a few years. But, and I suppose that's now maybe showing itself. But I was obviously on the crest of the wave leading up to the Liverpool game, and then the international break is, for one reason or another, we've just come back. I don't think we were poor. Well, we were poor against Liverpool, but I think it was the following three games where we've really begun to drop off substantially. There's a few concerns there for me right now, which weren't there at the beginning of the season. Maybe including the new signings, which I'm sure we'll touch on. But it's literally just been, yeah, the ultimate high and what feels like the ultimate low now.
Yeah, that certainly has definitely been disappointing since following the Liverpool game, really, has it? But,
yeah,
you know, Mark, no winning four, lost the last three, 9 goals conceded in the last 4 games, key players out injured or suspended, and from 1st to 7th in less than a month. It's I want to cry just after that sentence, but it's been quite painful, hasn't it, to watch?
Yeah, I think there's been a massive fallout from the derby for us, hasn't it? Hopefully it's just short term and we can get back on track, but the fallout from the derby was obviously injuries, suspensions, the huge hysteria from the media, which I can't believe has helped us. But then, you know, apart from them excuses sort of thing, I still think that we could have done much better over the last 3 games, and I think we've got it wrong 3 games on the trot. One with the team selection, but two with the way we've set up and with the way we've played. We all know the squad depth isn't as big quality wise as the first 11. If you lose Richarlison, he is sort of irreplaceable. If you lose a fully fit James, it's irreplaceable. We lose Coleman, he's a replaceable Dina, and so I get that, but then at the same time, I just feel that we've missed the trick last two or three games, and I think that even with the players out, we've definitely dropped points that we didn't need to. So I'm probably looking at the manager a little bit there. We were full of praise for them after the first seven games. Deservedly so, deserve credit, but he's also got to take a little bit of this responsibility for what's happened last three or four games, because I just feel that, as I say, and we'll go into a bit more a bit tactically and whatever, but I just feel that, you know, things have not been right for the last three games now.
Well, where are you then, Mark, with Angelotti at this moment in time? Is there a slight cause for concern about some of his decisions, or is he just basically working with what he's got, and he's going to need, you know, two or three transfer windows to sort out the obviously glaring issues in some of the players that we've still got at the club?
Yeah. So there's the two sides of that story then, isn't the first one is, yeah, he still needs a couple more windows. I agree with Neil, right back long term is an issue, because as much as Seamus tries his heart out when he's playing, and he has been better this season, there's no cover. John Joe Kenny is not the answer. And he's 31, 32 now, so that's got to be a pressing issue. The glaring omission from this squad at the moment is a right midfielder, and I said that before Walcott went. I thought we still needed one with Walcott. Then we've let him go, and rightly so, because he just wasn't fitting it for us. But there's a massive hole on that side. There's no one that can fit in. Again, like Neil said, the backup to Calvert-Lewin is Cenk Tosun, who we've tried to get rid of four times. So he's not the answer. So, yeah, I get that. There's definitely gaps within the squad. But my biggest issue at the moment is this 4-3-3 formation, because James hasn't been fit for the last four games. He's either been playing not fit or not playing. And we're leaving the right-back fully exposed. And teams have worked us out. Anyone with a decent left back, or even if they've got a decent wide attacker as well, the left 2-on-1 versus our right back time and time and time again. Decore and Allen have to shift over, and the subplot to that is the third midfielder, whether it's being Gomez or Sigurdsson, are a waste of space. So you're basically playing with nine men, because you've got Allen and Decore trying to do the defensive midfield work of four people. So it's affecting their game as well. I've noticed people talking about Allen and Decore haven't been playing as well, but they're trying to put fires out everywhere, and they haven't got the ground to make up. It's just too big. So you've got Sigurdsson doing nothing, who's leaving runners. I mean, I remember him leaving Ward-Prowse for the first goal at Southampton. For me, he left Fernandez for the first goal, and it's time and time again with him. But then obviously with James playing where he was, it was just leaving Coleman 2-on-1 time again. So they're just getting midfield runners coming from everywhere, and we can't cope with it. My worry is that was there against Southampton, and it's been allowed to happen the last two games as well. And that's where I'm worried about Ancelotti. It's not something that's new. And even when we were winning, Ian, at the start of the season, we were conceding twos. We were having goals against us coming from midfield, and yeah, teams were all down that right. So the warning signs have been there for a while defensively. And it's just the slow reaction of Ancelotti to fix that problem that's just worrying me at the moment. Now, fingers crossed, we go into the new set of fixtures after the break against Fulham, and that gets shored up and he looks at that. But I just think he's been really slow to react to fix that problem that's just so blatantly there.
I mean, Neil, after all those valid points that Mark has just said there, do we as fans then, do we need to quickly reassess our expectations for the remainder of the season? Because Ancelotti's not going to be able to do anything until January, and obviously in the transfer market, questionable whether he'll do anything anyway. But it's looking like, you know, Rodriguez is only our right midfielder for the remainder of the season. So it's like a domino effect, as Mark said. It's causing issues on the right midfield, and it's causing issues in defence, and players are just all over the place.
Well, I think it depends what he does next game. If he goes back to 4-3-3 and Richarlison makes that much of a difference, I think he might stick with it. But then again, we're playing Fulham, so you'd expect us to win. But I've got slight concerns about Ancelotti too, as Mark said, and Mark's already touched on them. But I'm not going to jump on his back, and I'm not suggesting for one second that he should be under the spotlight. But I would think that after, is it 11 months now in charge, that we would be more of a solid unit defensively with a manager of his pedigree, and that's not just the trophies he's won, but even, you know, the stereotype Italian. You know, I would expect us to be better set up at the back. Now, there wasn't really any clamour for us in the summer that we were weak defensively. I think there was a few calls for maybe a centre-half, but I think that was more as a backup, or, you know, just to get in the mix with what would have been Branthwaite, Mina, Keane and Holgate. But all of a sudden, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, you know, I'm unsure whether two or three of them are good enough. I mean, Keane's been decent. I'm not going to get on his back, but he ball watches a lot. He's conceded a lot of goals from crosses. Mark's right as well with the right-back situation. I mean, Seamus started really, really good. And, you know, I was surprised at how well he started, because I thought we needed a starting right-back, not just a right-back, but a starting right-back. But he's come in and maybe, you know, put that fire out, so to speak. But is he going to play well for 38 games of the season? Of course he's not. Jonjo Kenny isn't good enough. So now it's looking really bad that we didn't get a right-back. And it's just the organisation of the defence. I mean, as a manager, he's got more or less four internationals playing every week in the back line. I would expect us five, if you include the keeper, or the two keepers now, I would expect us to be more solid at the back. Wouldn't you?
Absolutely. I mean, the goals we conceded, in the first, you know, couple of games, you didn't really think about the goals we were conceding, because we were scoring goals for fun, and we were obviously picking up points as well as obviously progressing in the cup competition. So, you know, it's only been highlighted because we've lost games, and it's made us look certainly weak on that right hand side, even when Rodriguez has been playing, because we all know that he's not a defensive minded player. He doesn't track back, but I think, you know, you're not happy for that, but you'll accept it because of what he was able to do in the first couple of games and the chances and the goals he was able to score and create.
And I agree, like, there's no bigger fan of James than me. He's exactly why I go and watch football. But it's all well and good giving him a free role where he doesn't have to track back. If the output's exceeding what's going in the other end, and if we're defensively poor, and as Mark touched on before, Sigurdsson or Gomez, whoever plays in that role, is useless defensively. They just get waltzed past. And James isn't even there to go past. So we are down to nine men. And if he's not producing, which for whatever reason it is, he certainly hasn't the last couple of games, then it's highlighted. And it's just a problem that Ancelotti needs to fix. The obvious one is to put him in the middle and then put someone on the right who's going to protect Coleman. The only candidate for that now is Iwobi. And, you know, we've all got our opinions on Iwobi. But I just don't think that Ancelotti should have spotted that. I mean, teams have worked us out, and we know he's not going to get back. And at what point, as good as he is and as much as we love him and, you know, as great as he is in the final third, at what point are we going to say, well, you know what, you have to get back, you know, like, you have to at least run around. And a slightly, I don't want to be controversial here with James, but if he hasn't been that fit, and I think he did declare himself fit before the game at the weekend, and Ancelotti made a comment in the press conference that maybe he wasn't. And even if he is 80, 90% fit, I mean, he was dreadful the weekend. And I would expect a player whose game isn't based on energy and running and getting up and down and maybe skinning players to maybe put in a better performance than that. Or maybe it's just a mental thing if he's not 100% at it, that, you know, his way to pass goes and he doesn't get involved as much. But it was a bit concerning for me.
I mean, I was happy with the team, to be honest, that he put out. I felt Gordon not included aside because I was a bit gutted for him. I felt content. So I felt like there was a lot more balance compared to certainly the Newcastle game, because we all know the issues with that team that Ancelotti selected. So what were your initial thoughts when you saw that team, Mark? Were you positive? Did you think, you know, this is, you know, Bernard on the left, Rodriguez on the right? Obviously, the centre midfield three in Sigurdsson, Decore and Allen. I felt like it seems, you know, quite decent, a lot more balanced than Dominic Calvert-Lewin spearheading. So, you know, we started off well and scored the goal. And then it just, you know, that's where the defensive issues again hit us with that goal from Fernandez.
No, any side that has Gylfi Sigurdsson in the lineup, I can't be happy with me. You know, my feelings. is absolutely useless. He can't run. But you can't play a midfielder in that role who can't run. He just chases shadows, and then you expect some quality on the ball when he gets the ball, and his passing is array, his set pieces. I don't know why he's on set pieces when Hammers and Dino were on the pitch anyway, but he hits the first man time and time again. I read a stat the other day that he's never scored a free kick for us. I mean, that's why he came, wasn't it? He was a free kick specialist and stuff. He is a waste of time because we are just starting with 10 men. When you then throw a half for Hammers in, you can't run. We are starting with 9 men, and that's the problem. We can't have... And if you think about United were under pressure and got a lot of stick, but they've not lost at a domestic away game since Anfield in January. They've got a really, really good away side. I think it was before that Istanbul game, they'd lost, they were 18 or 19 away games unbeaten. So they're a good side, and you can see why, because they've got pace. They've got Rashford, Martial, Fernandes is breaking. They've got other players like Luke Shaw bombing down the line. They just picked us off at ease once we scored.
I mean, that is, sorry to interrupt, but that is their strengths. You just named a couple of attributes in their team. They are, Solskjaer has set them up as a counter-attacking team, so it's no wonder, regardless of whether there's fans in the stadium or not, you know, home or away, that they are better as an away attacking unit.
100%. And so that, you know, the water, that's what I'm saying, the warning signs were there. We knew that they would attack that right hand side. And don't forget, Coleman's only just come back from injury as well. So we're left Luke Shaw and Rashford versus a half-fit Coleman. Rashford was just allowed to drift wherever he wanted because no one knew where to pick him up. Luke Shaw was just bombing on, basically playing as a left winger. And so it was. That's what I'm saying about Doucouré. Doucouré's then getting dragged over to the right. Alan's getting dragged over. So then there's bigger gaps in the middle. So Fernandes is just running through a big empty gap into the middle of Keane and Holgate, who should have done better than seeing it and picked them up. But I don't think the protection's there at the moment. And that's my big issue is that. And so I'll go back to what Neil said before, because we've talked about this off this podcast, is that I would rather have an Iwobi or a Bernard on the right now. To cover Coleman once Richarlison's back on the left, and have two solid banks of four, and have Hammers behind Calvert-Lewin. Now you've still got Richarlison able to bomb on down the left with Dinya. Then you'd have Coleman linking up with Iwobi or Bernard, but actually getting back to support him. And then there's no defensive duties for Hammers then, because let's face it, like Neil said before, he doesn't really. But I'd rather have him in that pocket where he can drift wherever he wants and cause murder, because we know he can do it.
And if he plays there, it's like the whole team protects him rather than just Coleman, and then dragging Doucouré out, which just affects the whole balance of the team. But if you're going to give him that free role, and he's far more effective. I mean, he's getting the ball on the touchline the weekend, and they know what he's going to do. He's going to come on his left foot, and it's brilliant when it comes off, and he switches it so quickly. Obviously helps if you've got Richarlison on the other side. But I feel like he's getting a bit wasted out there. Yeah. He could do more damage in the middle too. I think it would help him, and it would help the team.
He can go on, Mark.
I was just going to say, he can pick up pockets anywhere then, can't he? He can drift over to the right, he can drift over to the left, he can help build up play wherever he wants to go. And ultimately, let's get someone closer to Calvert-Lewin, who's just been so isolated the last three games. So, for me, shape-wise, defensively, that is so much better than what's working at the moment, because you've got cover for both fullbacks, and at least you've got two solid banks of four when defending. But going forward, that actually gives us more as well, because you get something going from the right, something from the left, and Hammers in a far more potent area than, because like Neil's just said, when he was getting the ball into feet, Hammers, he was nearly on the halfway line, and Luke Shaw's literally pushing him back into our own half. Don't want him there. I want him in the final third, causing murder, creating chances. So I do think there's a problem with shape at the moment, and that's ultimately what's costing us goals. Yes, Michael Keane could do better and attack the ball better. Yes, I do think, you know, defensive players should do a bit more. But ultimately, you look at the amount of goals that are coming at us from midfield players or from midfield runs, and it's not. That's the problem at the moment. So I just want Alan and Doucouré to get back to being a shield and not having to go left, right and getting dragged everywhere. I want them to be a solid, compact unit. And then Doucouré should be able to bomb on and help out going forward instead of having to cover the right back all the time. So it's I'm just watching it going, it's just there in front of me. I'm just going, what are we watching here? Because this is just the same 3 weeks on the trot now. So that's I suppose that needs to be seen. We can't dress it up as, oh, you know, Ancelotti's won 3 European Cups, who are we to challenge it? Well, no, I don't buy that at all. We know our team, we know our players just as much as anyone, and we can see where the gaps are. And I think, you know, all 3 of us have basically just said the same thing. So get back on it now and start. Stop leaking them goals. Do something different.
And another thing for me there, sorry to jump in. I mean, we've been talking about the defence and whatnot, but when we were getting the ball in midfield, there was just no bravery. They were just playing it back to where it was coming from. And that wasn't happening at the beginning of the season. When we played Tottenham, and particularly against Palace, the midfielders were taking the ball in tight situations and turning and moving the ball quickly and fizzing it into feet. And that was just that was why we looked so much more dangerous. And all of a sudden, we've just gone back to this slow tempo with the ball. And it's just easy to play against, because all you've got to do is go, just get within 1 meter of him when he gets the ball, and you're just going to play it back to wherever it's come from. I'm thinking of Sigurdsson here. I'm even putting Doucouré in that bracket from the weekend. I thought he had a poor game. And it was just very easy to play against.
I mean, Neil, I think I asked Mark on this the last podcast on this question, so I'll go away from the game itself for a moment, but just basically from what we've all touched upon there and all kind of agreed on, we think Rodriguez is natural fit, is the centre of the park, or, you know, at least behind the striker or strikers. Have we made a mistake in letting both Keane and Walcott leave? Obviously, Walcott, a naturally wide right-footed player. I'm not saying he was the answer by any means. I've criticised Walcott a lot myself. Keane, obviously not, you know, he can play on the wing, but you would expect him to be a striker. But we've let two players go there who could play on that right-hand side, and then that would then force Rodriguez into the middle of the park. Because I know we're talking about Awobi going in there, but for me, I still don't think he's good enough whatsoever.
Yeah, well, I think the mistake is not replacing them rather than letting them go. Yep. Because I don't think either of them have been good enough. Listen, Moise Keane's shown flashes, and he seems to be doing it a bit at PSG now, but there's a lot of variables to that, which we won't get into. But I don't know whether Moise Keane has to go. You don't quite know the circumstances behind that, but we are lacking in that department. Now, it must have been a conversation where they've gone, we'll let them go, and Ancelotti's gone, well, you know, I'm going to end up with Cenk Tosun as my backup forward, and we've got no one else to play right mid. Because as Mark said, I thought we needed a right winger. Right winger's been on the cards for what? Maybe two summers now? Right back, right winger. And we've just not produced. And then that goes back to the recruitment. And then you're looking at Marcel Brands, or, you know, who knows about what conversations are going on behind the scenes. But I don't think it was a mistake letting them go. I don't think any of them have necessarily been good enough for us. But I think the mistake has been not replacing them. And we don't know the financial constraints, you know, but obviously, hopefully that might reveal itself in January.
I mean, the replacement's actually a really good point, because they've both gone out on loan, and effectively Walcott's contract is up at the end of the season, if I'm not mistaken. So he's just going to leave on a free. We're not going to renew that. He's going to go. I think I'm right in saying that. And obviously Keane is, you know, he's banging them in for the PSG. But is he going to want to come back to the club now? He's obviously had a bit of a torrid time. The only thing that you could suggest that's going to happen with him that's going to benefit the club is by his valuation going up if he keeps scoring goals. Because there's no way he's going to come back to want to play for us. That I can't see that. I'd be very surprised.
I can't see that either. I don't think he was I don't think he was happy. I think that move suited everyone. I think at the time, we were actually worried whether he was even going to get game time, and what was the point in the loan from an Everton perspective if there was plans to bring him back. But to be fair, that doesn't seem to have been the case. I'm not following PSG every week, but he's certainly involved in the goals and whatnot. He's getting game time. So, yeah, it's a funny one, Moise Keane, but maybe it is a case of, as you say, just getting his valuation up and then reinvesting that money into someone a bit more suitable. And maybe a bit further down the career path. We need someone ready to go. He can go in the team and produce. like Decore Allen and James has. That's what we need, ready-made players to go into the first 11. Godfrey's another one we've bought. Hopefully we'll see more of him this season. I think it'll be sooner rather than later with Godfrey. I honestly do. Wouldn't surprise me if he was... not a right back, no. But I think he'll be in a team sooner rather than later.
All right, well, back to the game then, Mark. And just in terms of Pickford was back in, wasn't he? Obviously, despite a solid performance from Olsen against Newcastle, we all knew he was going to be back in because Angelotti said so before the Newcastle game. So was it the right decision for you? Probably didn't really have a bearing or impact on the game, the fact that Pickford was in there. So, you know, Angelotti still thinks that he's number one.
The View from the Gladys Street podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The View from the Gladys Street podcast.
No, it sounds like an Ancelotti witch hunt today, and it's not, but I just don't agree with some of the decisions he's made lately, and I think the way he firstly, that first week after the derby, it was just a deathly silence from the club about Pickford, right up till the next press conference just before Southampton, and I thought we could have protected them a little bit better. Secondly, when you bring Olsen in against Newcastle, and before he's even started the game, he's saying this is the only game you're playing because Pickford's back in next week. I mean, how does that make him feel? Especially when he's come in and done really well. He actually looked the most assured of an Everton goalkeeper that I've seen for years. He was big, solid, big frame. And I thought, yeah, that's what I want to see. So I don't agree with how he's handled it.
Just sorry to interrupt you, but I'll throw another question in there. I agree with you. After the derby, I was frustrated at how, you know, the silence from the club with regards to the, you know, the witch hunt for Pickford. But how would you have wanted Angelotti or, you know, officials from the club to have handled that? Would you want them to have come out in the media and said something? Yeah. Because, you know, as much as the Liverpool mouthpiece was obviously, they got the ball rolling and stuff like that, it was a lot of people probably in the media doing the witch hunt on Pickford rather than, you know, Liverpool players themselves. I know that did come, don't get me wrong, that did come eventually, you know, day 13, day 14 of all that. But Angelotti didn't do a press conference until the Friday before the Southampton game. And that was when he was first asked about it, wasn't it? So that's when he backed them up. Would you have rather the club come out and said something?
Yeah, because by the Tuesday, it was all that anyone was talking about, wasn't it? And, you know, you had pundit, ex-Liverpool players, saying it was a disgrace and shouldn't play again. And then I think it culminated in Wijnaldum's press conference for Holland on the Wednesday. And that's when we should have come out and gone, hang on a minute, this is a joke now. Our goalkeeper's made a mistake. We're sorry for Van Dijk's injury, but leave him alone now. This is beyond a joke. He hasn't killed anyone. So we just let it drag on. And yeah, I just think that affected them to the point where he had to leave him out against Newcastle just to give his head a rest. But then I thought, it dressed up over his performances anyway then, didn't it? So everyone was talking about that incident when actually we should have been talking about his poor form, and his poor form merited him being dropped. Not one game against Newcastle, and by the way, you're back in again next week. Now, there was that incident second half, and maybe Maguire did push him and whatever, but it's just the panic he causes at the moment. And I've been a Pickford fan. I've backed him for ages where people have had enough of him. But I just think he adds to the uncertainty defensively at the moment. Not only have you got people running through from midfield and whatever, do you honestly think they're confident in their goalkeeper behind them at the moment? I'm not too sure. I would say that Olsen having come in, I'm probably old school, where if you come in and do well, you keep your place. And Olsen probably feels hard done by there.
I thought he played well. I thought he was one of our best players that day. He just looked assured. Yeah. But whether that was a case of us not seeing a keeper look, I don't know, the stature in the box even, and he seems to have a presence about him. Maybe, you know, we do go overboard when we see the opposite to what's been happening, maybe. But yeah, I'm with you, Mark. I'd have kept him in.
Yeah. I mean, I got a text message off a mate during the Newcastle game. I don't know if you remember it, where the ball just came in for the cross or a long ball. Can't remember what it was. And Olsen just came out commandingly and caught it. I got a text message straight away saying, my God, we've got a keeper who can catch a ball. I mean, it was quite like funny at the time, but I just think back and go, you know, you shouldn't be saying those sort of things about your keeper. And they, like I say, I don't want to like go on a Pickford too much, because hopefully he will be able to turn his form around. But Neil, do you think, I said at the time after the Liverpool game that this is going to make or break Pickford. This, you know, we all thought he was a little bit mentally weak, maybe a little bit immature. Some of the things that he's done and some of the things that we've witnessed them do. So, you know, the backlash that he got from the Van Dijk challenge, and that's all it was. It was just a badly timed challenge. It wasn't anything else. And he's had to face these issues in the media. You would have thought as a professional that would make you mentally stronger, or you would have hoped it would have made you mentally stronger. And it's probably had the adverse effect, because he has been dropped from the team. And as Mark said there, Ancelotti probably just wanted to take him out of the firing line.
Yeah, and I think it all comes down to his character. We make assumptions on his character based on what we see. And I think Mark's touched on it previously about maybe he's not the most intellectual of guys. He seems to make a few bad decisions in other areas of his life too. But what we're interested in at the end of the day is how he performs for 90 minutes. And yeah, okay, I feel sorry for him with some of the backlash he got for the Van Dijk challenge. You know, the bodyguards and the death threats and whatnot. But ultimately, all we care about is what he does for those 90 minutes. And for me, that's what he should be judged on. And regardless of what happens now, it's not like it's going to be any different to what was happening before. If he comes out and makes a mistake against Fulham and costs us a goal, we can't point to the media witch hunt from the Van Dijk challenge, because it's been happening for the last two seasons. He had one good season, and since then it's been a really, you know, it's not even a slump, is it? It's now consistently bad.
Yeah.
So it's a concern, you know. But as Mark said, he made a mistake the weekend with it. It was a typical Pickford mistake. It was rash. It came from nowhere. They always just seem to come from nowhere. I didn't even think he had to go for that ball.
Yeah, it looked like it was going out for a goal kick, to be honest.
Yeah, and it's the old phrase that he has to get involved, but that's what it is. It feels like he has to get involved in some way, shape or form. And it's to our detriment, unfortunately. And I mean, who knows what Ancelotti's thinking. Personally, I think that they may be going, is this Donnarumma, is it? Is that how you pronounce it? He's out of contract next season. Maybe they've held off on getting a first team keeper this summer in order to maybe wait for him to be free next summer. But you know, the lengths they go to sign a new player these days, Robin Olsen's come in, surely he's got to get more game time. And it wouldn't surprise me if he played more than Pickford between now and the end of the season.
Right. Well, quick and easy question. Well, not an easy question, but just a simple question for you now, Mark. Why can't Anthony Gordon get in the team?
Oh, it's a good question, mate. And do you know what? It's funny, since Richarlison's been out, there's no direct replacement for him. But the one out of it, what would be Bernard and Gordon, who's got the closest attributes to him, is Anthony Gordon, because he's the quickest, he's direct, and he'll run at the fullback. He's got legs, which is what we've been missing the last 3 weeks, hasn't he? I've no idea, mate. Honestly, I'm not saying he's Pele. I'm not saying he's, you know, he should be definitely getting 90 minutes every week. But what I'm saying is everyone else has been given a chance. So why not him as well? At least he should have been involved in one of those three games. And I thought against Southampton when he came on, he'd done all right as well. He was, you know, in a poor performance. He came on and done all right, and then he bombed again. So don't understand it. I have no idea. Ancelotti's the one who's making these decisions and seeing him in training. But then again, he's seeing Sigurdsson in training and playing him. So I don't know, Ian, is the honest question. And I think that the lad probably feels hard done by, because he probably does deserve a start or two, doesn't he? Considering everyone else is getting one. So, you tell me.
I mean, you were right there, the Southampton game. I mean, Neil, did you watch that one? He came on and he had a bright cameo, I thought, and nearly got an assist.
Yeah, he's a positive player. I mean, I touched on that before, how the lack of bravery on the ball, and he's someone who gets the ball and tries to make things happen. He tries to penetrate, and that's what we need. I don't think he's turning to Pele through not playing. It's the old cliche of players become better when they're not playing, but it's because we've been playing so poorly. And with Richarlison missing, so we've only played, it's 20 minutes, is it, across the three games? That's just not enough. And you look at our bench the weekend, and there wasn't much, was there, to bring on. And Anthony, how he's not got on that bench the weekend is beyond me. There's definitely more to it. Maybe it's the incident where he's knocked on his door, but Ancelotti mentioned that, and he's too long in the tooth to be bothered by someone knocking at his door, surely. You know, a 20-year-old lad asking him why he's not playing. That should just be part of the job. I think there's more to it behind the scenes, whether it comes out over the next couple of weeks. I'd have started him. And just while we're on that, I thought Bernard played, I'm not Bernard's biggest fan, but I thought he had a decent first half on Saturday, and he was the only one actually trying to get the ball and do something with it, nearly created the other goal with Luka Dean.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Bernard did okay. I wouldn't say he had an amazing game, but he scored a decent goal from a knockdown from Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who I thought did tremendously well, considering he was up there by himself, by the way. But the biggest issue for me wasn't that Anthony Gordon didn't start the game. It was the fact that he wasn't on the bench, because then, if you look at the substitutions, specifically the third one, where he brought Cenk Tosun on for James. Now, I know he got asked to be taken off because he was probably shattered, but he's basically brought a winger off for a striker. So who's going to provide, you know, the crosses and the balls for Cenk Tosun to score these goals? So it only emphasised, bringing Tosun on only emphasised the fact that it was such a terrible decision not to include Anthony Gordon in that squad. And he's in by no means the same calibre as Richarlison, but it's like Mark said, I've got to agree, he's the closest thing we've got in terms of profile of a player. Because I know he played for the under-23s on the Sunday, and obviously completely different calibre of opposition, but he ran down a left wing and crossed the ball in, and we scored a goal. It's kind of, you know, what we've been missing and what we've been crying out for, and it's difficult when you see stuff like that. That we're crying out for it on you know, big match days, and we're just not getting it.
Well, you've asked me before about whether it was a mistake letting Moise Keane and Walcott go, but if you'd have told me at the time then Anthony Gordon was going to be frozen out completely, then it's even more bizarre, isn't it? Yeah. Is it just leaving us with no wingers? At the time, maybe we thought, well, maybe he's going to play Gordon a lot, because he was giving him quite a bit of game time after lockdown, which suggested that he was going to play a lot more this season. And then to just be not, as I just said, Ian, to just be not on the bench and not even have that option, it's criminal.
The squad's still unbalanced, isn't it? If you think about Richarlison being out, and you've got three potential wide left players in Iwobi, Bernard and Gordon. And it's fair to say Ancelotti probably doesn't trust any of them. And then we've got absolutely no one on the right that can come in. So that's obviously going to be a key area next year to address, to let Bernard go, possibly let Iwobi go, and get someone in on the right and start making that squad more balanced. But just going back to before, Ian, about that then, and Iwobi and Gordon, but I still feel though that the team is better off if one of them starts on the right and at least offers some cover to Coleman than actually playing James from the right, who's not fit, and having Guilfi or Gomez on the sides. I still think it's still a better option than actually playing that way, because at least it just offers two banks of four, which I just think that's getting back to basics at the moment, is what's needed to stop that supply line. So I think one of them should play on the right, and yeah, there's an argument for Iwobi or Bernard or Gordon, but one of them three should play on the right in front of Coleman for now, until we can maybe get to January and get somebody in.
But what if he played Iwobi as part of the midfield three?
Could do.
I actually probably would have done that against Man United. I don't rate Iwobi, but I think if he's in a midfield three, his biggest negative is that he gives the ball away all the time. But I think if he's in that three, he's got more options on the ball rather than when he gets it on the left wing and he's got basically Calvert-Lewin in front of him if he wants to go forward. I just think in a three, he'd be less likely to give the ball away.
I think he's a better option than Gomez and Sigurdsson at the moment. But then again, Neil, you're a better option than Gomez and Sigurdsson at the moment.
Don't know about that.
Well, if we're dishing out options and formations, is there scope for a 3-5-2 in terms of now that we're, if we get, you know, centre backs and centre halves back fit, yeah. Is there scope for that? Obviously, we know Luca Dean and Seamus Coleman can play that wing back, and then that would forcefully put Rodriguez into the middle of the park anyway, and we've kind of solved the right-hand side issue then.
It is, and it's something I've thought about. Obviously, I'd still think the 4-4-1-1 would help us now. But having said that, like you've just said, if you played three at the back, you could play Holgate one side and Godfrey the other, and then have one of Keane or Meaney in the middle. Coleman and Dean, you can be your wing-backs then, and then they'd have cover with Holgate and Godfrey either side. So I get that, and it just allows Alan and Decore to sit. Then you could get back to last season and have Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison up front with James behind. Now, that offers more balance. That offers more protection. And that's what I'm saying, Ian. There's better options at the moment than this 4-3-3. And I'm not just saying that because we've lost the last three games. We conceded two against West Brom. We conceded two against Brighton. We conceded two against Fleetwood. We were conceding all these goals when we were winning. The warning signs are there. This is something fundamentally that's wrong with the defensive shape of the side, and we can't continue like that. So for me, it's either that 4-4-1-1, or yeah, we can play three at the back, get the pace into the side, and actually play a little bit of a higher line because we've got the recovery pace then. So there are options there, and I just expect someone of Ancelotti's calibre to be able to identify that and get back to it. Like you've said, Neil, he's nearly a year in now, and we're conceding goals for fun. I'd have expected a far better shape from an Italian manager, especially.
Mm. Well, lads, we've been talking for 45 minutes, so I don't want to keep you for too much longer. But so very quickly, Neil, I've seen some people on Twitter suggest Everton have already overachieved so far this season. Obviously, you know, we were top of the league and had a nice unbeaten run in the early stage of the season, and now we've gone four without a win. Would you agree with that? Have we overachieved in terms of, you know, where we've got to, and now we've gone into a little bit of a slump?
Well, it can be taken out of context that I think if we'd won one, lost one, won one, lost one, won one, lost one, we might be, everyone would probably think that's where we should be. But because, you know, we were top of the league for a while, I think maybe people are still thinking, you know, that they're going to drop down, which is ultimately what's happened. I still think, listen, they've gone into this season looking for a European spot without a shadow of a doubt. You can't have Ancelotti in charge, paying him 200 odd grand a week and signing those players. We've had the wage bills gone up with those players. But I still think that the European spot's the main target. Top six. Yeah. But if you put a gun against my head now and ask me whether we were going to get it, it all comes down to January signings.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Mark, I didn't necessarily agree with the overachievement. I don't think it's right at all, because if you look at the games individually, you could probably say the only game we've overachieved on is the Spurs game, because we don't beat Spurs away, or we very rarely do. Every other game that we've managed to get a win and a result in, you've probably expected to, you know, it's beat the teams that you should be beating. You know, even Liverpool at home, we very rarely lose to Liverpool at home. You know, we draw a lot. I know we don't win. So the draw was probably just, you know, it was a draw. We expected it to be a draw. Even the Southampton-Newcastle game, really, we probably underachieved there, but without that, we should have definitely beat those teams. So the fact that, you know, just because we ended up top after that, I definitely don't think we've overachieved.
No, I don't think you can overachieve in four games. Anyone can win four games on the track, can't they? But I said I'd put a positive slant on it for you today, mate. So here's a few positives to put a smile on your face.
Go on, hit me with it, because I need it.
So the first one is, someone said at the start of the season, going into the November break, you'd be above Man United, Man City and Arsenal and Wolves. You'd have probably laughed at them. So that's where we are. the league's very tight, but there's 8 points between first and 15th. So there's a lot of teams all doing similar things at the moment. Good wins, weird defeats, good wins again, weird defeats. It's just a mad league, very competitive league, which is what I think we've all craved for years, isn't it? Rather than just having a runaway one or two. We've got, at the moment, a lot of teams who are really, really competitive. So I enjoyed that. After the break, yeah, hopefully we've got a fully fit squad. And, you know, I'm really interested to see how Gbamon gets on. Putting no pressure on the lad. I think, you know, I just hope he gets a good look, run of injury-free form now, and we can see what he can add to the side. So I think there's still positives. I still think that, look, we've not lost a lot of ground. We're still only 5 points off top, and no one's aiming for first, let's be honest. But we, if we can hover around there, the three games after the break are Fulham, Leeds and Burnley. What a great chance to try and put three wins back-to-back together again and get back up there. So there's still positives, and ultimately, despite my little go at Ancelotti today, he's still the best man to bring in quality players, isn't he? And I think long-term, he's the one who's going to attract the better players. And if he gets the better players, then they're just going to naturally fit into his system for him anyway. My only gripe is, like I say, I just think he could have done a little bit better with what we have got at the moment. But long-term, he's the man that you want attracting these players. And we're linked with Milik from Napoli. I'd gladly have him. Left-footed option up front. Tall, can definitely cover Calvert-Lewin and compliment him as well. Then you've got the links with Isco. I can see that because we need a bit of creativity in the park. Not necessarily starting every week, but an option that's better than Gomez and Sigurdsson. And so you can see the long-term plan with him in place. So if you want some positivity, mate, there it is. It's not full on. We've lost three games, but we've got to regroup and go again. And hopefully, like you say, after the break, we've got a full squad to get going again. And that game of Fulham is massive now, isn't it, for how we set up for the rest of the season?
Absolutely. I mean, we won't go into Fulham, Mark, but I'm not going to put a negative spin on what Mark's just said there, but it would just be typical Everton to lose against Fulham because they haven't had a great start to the season themselves, have they, really?
No, they haven't won a game yet, have they, Fulham?
So it'd be typical Everton to give them 3 points, basically, then, wouldn't it?
Don't get me back on Ian after that game, if that's the case.
No worries. Fantastic. All right, lads. Well, thank you for coming on the show. It's definitely cheered me up. After every game that we lose, I always think, I literally can't be bothered doing these. And then after every chat with the Blues, it definitely does perk you up.
It's a bit of therapy.
Oh, it definitely is. Without a doubt, it definitely is, and it definitely helps. And we'll definitely get you back on the show again, lads, without a doubt.
Thanks for me for having us.
Thanks, Ian. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no worries. So that's it for this week's View from a Garden Street show. Many thanks for coming on. Many thanks for listening. Mark, thank you. Neil, thank you. You've been listening to the View from the Gladys Street podcast on the Royal Blue channel.
You've been listening to the View from the Gladys Street podcast from the Liverpool Echo.